Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun, gotta give him the credit. He's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay. He just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies till they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open to that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you two, Not in a Creepy Way.
Hey. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is brother Jay.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 2006 J.J. Abrams film Mission Impossible 3.
Yeah, we are.
Drew, you've been looking forward to this.
I have been looking forward to this. There's a lot about this movie I like quite a bit. And I haven't seen it in a number of years. But it did not disappoint. This is great. This is so different than Mission Impossible 2. So different. And I cannot wait to hear what you guys thought about
it. Brother Jay, have you seen this movie before? And
I have never seen this movie before. I watched it approximately 3 hours ago.
Oh, fresh.
Yeah. So I actually kind of liked it. So
I liked it a lot.
I should say,
good.
I didn't hate it anywhere near as much as the last one. But also, I have to spice this with the fact that also the last two movies that I've seen are Adaptation, which was a shit show. And Mission Impossible 2. So I'm not sure that my metric is real accurate, but seemingly this is a much better movie than the last two movies I've seen. So draw from some conclusions from that data.
Well, I will still fight you over Adaptation, but yeah, I think Mission Impossible 3 is great. It had 100% less birds than Mission Impossible 2.
And it had MVP Philip Seymour Hoffman, who, except for the very end, was such an awesome villain.
Yeah. Everybody did a great job in this movie. I was impressed. Mm-hmm. But was that child or
sorry,
dog?
I'm downstairs in the office of my lake house, and my family is directly behind a closed door watching a movie.
Yeah, and the lake house is kind of echoey, so we'll see what we can do in post, but yeah, it's fine. We don't expect you to install the pod booth in the...
It's still better than the phone.
Oh, yeah, much better than the phone. Also better than Tiptoes.
That's what we were looking at if we'd recorded last week.
Yeah.
Maybe a phone.
Yeah, it's been a couple weeks. Full of adventure, but we'll get into that later. So, Mission Impossible 3. Drew, had you seen it before?
Yes. I saw it when it first came out on video.
I think that's how I must have seen it, too.
I certainly was not going to go see it in the movie theater after Mission Impossible 2.
No.
but I remember being blown away. Especially the opening, the whole Carrie Russell thing, I thought was really well done.
I thought the whole time jump thing was good too.
I see that really wasn't the open though. The open was the and the, you know, the subterfuge, the misdirection. Spoilers.
And is there any way that Billy Crudup is not the bad guy in anything he ever has done, including real life?
Well, you realize that I still, and we talked about this when we talked about Almost Famous, but I confuse Billy Crudup with the lead singer of Smashing Pumpkins every time.
What?
Who's the lead singer of Smashing Pumpkins? Billy Corgan, maybe?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's a big douchebag, too.
Okay.
But in a different way.
They don't look alike.
No, but it's the name.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
There's no reason for
the name and the D-bag meter, apparently.
Maybe, yeah. I guess I don't know a lot about I don't really know either about either of their personal D-bag situations, except that that Billy Corgan is one pretentious artsy mother trucker. And also, are you familiar with J.T. Leroy?
Yes, the fake author.
Yes. Are you familiar, Jason?
Not by name.
Well, this this woman wrote these books by J.T. Leroy. They're supposed to be autobiographical, and he was like a truck stop underage male prostitute, and it was all very, very, very like gritty, and the heart is deceitful among all things, or something, is one of the is the book and the movie. But Asia Argento and Billy Corgan both kind of got involved over the phone with this kid, who was sort of he only appeared in public a couple times, and he had sort of this androgynous sort of thing going on because he's supposed to be really young and whatever. Turns out it was all a scam. And there's a documentary about it that's really interesting. And I think there may actually be a fictional movie starring Kristen Stewart about it also, I think. But oh, it's interesting. It's an interesting story. But there's actual audio recordings of Billy Corgan having long conversations with this guy. Or this girl who's pretending to be this guy.
Huh.
Because it's the author's sister that turns out to have to be trying the role. Anyway, it's a whole, the whole thing's very complicated. Also, this is during the filming of that movie is where Asia Argento, daughter of Dario Argento, horror director extraordinaire, legend, she from Bee Monkey, she had some sort of relationship with an underage actor who played the son, maybe even the J.T. Leroy character in that movie because she played the mom. It's so that's how she got herself Me Too'd, because she and Rose McGowan were hanging out all the time until people released the audio and maybe even like messages or something that proved that she was probably in England what they call a sex pest. So
that's a very cosmopolitan word.
Yeah. Well, okay. So, by the way, this digression, brought to you on behalf of Uncle John, a listener of the podcast, tip of the hat to our Uncle John. We found out during Christmas that, that he listens to the podcast, which is really flattering. Also, it means that he knows all of my stories. So that's kind of funny. Make small talk.
Also, he was maybe nonplussed that we name dropped him during our Citizen Kane podcast to talk about when he took us to such cinema masterpieces as Clash of the Titans and Flash Gordon.
He took me to Tron.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
He was nonplussed, like,
well, as he's walking down the streets of Juno that actually had other people walking past, he describes as being, hey, wait, I know Citizen Kane too, and I'm just reduced to the guy that took them to a science fiction crappy movie. Like, well, it's different facets. Well,
he's also not going to take up like what, 5-year-old to Citizen Kane.
Exactly.
Yeah. Also, he's welcome to come on and discuss any movie he'd ever like to. Right,
offer extended. Absolutely.
I mean, as I'm saying, we welcome all people. So we'd be more than happy to have a guest, since everybody's reluctant to come on.
But at this point, I'm just happy to have a listener. So again, thank
you. Sorry, Mom.
No, it's. I mean, let me tell you. It turns out we have lots of faithful. We again, they're not many, but they are treasured.
They're loyal.
Yeah,
our fans are loyal.
So hopefully, we'll try to keep them that way.
Except for Mom.
Yeah, well, burping out a 37-minute episode that was stretched as much as possible, including leaving in where we talked about how much we're going to have to stretch this episode. I think, you know, a little scraping, but, you know, life interfered. Little did we know.
Yeah.
You know, Dad asked for some AirPods for Christmas. Yeah, I don't know where that's going. But
did he get them?
Thought it was odd.
Did he receive them for Christmas?
He will be getting them next week.
Oh. I got some weird in-air, they're just little in-air speaker things, like AirPods, but they're a different brand.
Like, did you get the Ray J one?
Like, I don't even know what brand they are.
Schlong 9000?
No. I don't think I'd put a Schlong 9000 in my ear, but...
Well, not twice.
Maybe they're Jet brand or something, J brand or some kind of J bud, or I don't know what they were, but it comes with you put it in the case and the case charges it. So it says, 24 hours of playback, but really what it means is like, well, you can charge it all the time and get 24 hours out of the battery, but it does not mean that the two earbuds themselves have 24 hours of playback, but they've been actually kind of useful.
Can you go mono?
Yes.
So you can wear one at a time.
If you wear only one, you can.
So you can just...
The right one.
Infinite.
No, if you go mono, you can only wear the right one.
Oh.
Yeah, I have a very similar pair. They're called Earfun. It's a terrible name, but they're they're really inexpensive, but good, like true wireless earbuds.
Where did you get them?
Amazon.
Because a lot of those things, Amazon won't ship to Alaska because they include batteries.
Except if they're teeny tiny batteries.
I'm just telling you, you try to put it in your checkout on your cart.
Yeah, that's getting worse all the time.
Mine are JBuds Air True Blue. They are Bluetooth wireless in-ear earphones with microphone.
So are they nice? Do you like them?
I do. But they were only $50.
Yeah, question for both of you. Do you like your cheap ones, Drew?
I do. The only thing that bothers me is what Jason said is the left one is a slave. So you can't wear the left one by itself and have the right one charging. But you can wear the right one.
Yeah. Also, sometimes because one is slave to the other, sometimes there is a little bit, just the teeny tiniest of audio lag between the two of them, and it'll sync back up, but I notice that now and then.
There's latency between the two ears?
Well,
when it just pairs, right?
Usually.
Okay.
So because all the sound goes to one earbud and then it sends the signal to the other earbud. So, you're getting that kind of dynamic. I will say that my Sony headphones that are the... It's like the battery is a ring, like a horseshoe that goes around your neck and the earbuds go in your ear. So it's wireless Bluetooth, but it's not like just completely in the ear thing.
Do you like that?
I love them. They are the best thing I've bought lately. I love them so much. The only thing about them is that the noise cancellation is so good that I have people constantly scare the crap out of me. So, and it has adaptive sound control so that if it notices you're walking, it changes the noise cancellation to allow ambient noises around you when you're walking. As opposed to if you sit down and you're in a quiet space, it adjusts the sound noise cancellation. So it's got different modes. It's got a pass-through mode, an off mode. So
how expensive are those?
Those were like $200.
Yeah, okay. That prices me out of them.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but they are super comfortable that you can use them. They've got a microphone, so you can use them on your cell phone to talk to people with, which is also super awesome. And I think they have a 12-hour playback. So I've never gone through a day where I've killed them. I just come home and charge them. So I really, really like those. Even though it's on a, it's kind of like having headphones a little bit because you have the thing around your neck, but I really enjoy it. They're really one of the best pairs I've bought in the last 10 years.
Excellent. You'll have to send me a link. Again,
they're probably cheaper now. I bought them, it was a year and a half ago, 2 years ago.
I've been using the same Sony behind the neck wired headphones. They used to be $12 a piece. Now I think they're up to almost $20 a piece, but I think they're G45s or something close to that. And I love them because I can hear everything through them. They are the least noise canceling because they sit on top of my ears instead of in my canals. And so I can mostly hear everything that's going on. And I wear them like if I'm not working, I will wear them probably 22 hours of the day. Because I wear them while I'm sleeping. I wear them while I'm awake. I wear them while I've been bad or good. So I'm good for headphone sake. Anyway. Okay. So headphone talk brought to you by Ear Fun. There you go. Okay. So back to Mission Impossible 3, a movie that it sounds like all three of us enjoyed. This is a lightweight movie. I mean, it's got everything I want in it.
This is the most MacGuffin movie ever.
Yes.
They call the MacGuffin in this movie Rabbit's Foot, but they really should have just called it MacGuffin.
Yeah.
Because even at the end, Ethan Hunt is like, what is the Rabbit's Foot? And they just kind of blow it off. Yeah. They're like, eh, you don't need to know.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's like a meta commentary. You don't need to know. Doesn't matter.
They kind of teased it, though, in a way that they were going to ensure the next movie.
Well.
No, didn't matter.
Let me praise, before we get into the plot of it, let me praise the opening. You have a cold open, which is great. And then you have the credit opening. And even better than the first movie I said was crap because the credit opening gave you scenes for the movie you're about to see. The second movie just gave you a tiny bit of that, but actually, mostly it was just blood stuff, right? And this movie was nothing. They didn't do that at all. It's great. Now, next movie, I think, is where I'm going to have another problem, but why jump ahead?
Well, why get ahead of ourselves? Yeah, we exactly. Never do that.
No, let's just talk about Mission Impossible 3. So, the movie opens with Ethan Hunt, Tom Cruise, has retired from being an IMF team leader, instead opting for a quiet life with his fiancée, Julia, Michelle Monaghan from Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, The Bourne Supremacy, and Source Code. She is a hospital nurse, and during the opening scene, she has actually been being held captive by Philip Seymour Hoffman, who, of course, we know from Leap of Faith, Boogie Nights, The Big Lebowski, The Talented Mr. Ripley, Almost Famous, Red Dragon, Capote, and The Master. I think he's one of our heavy hitters. He and Matt Damon.
He's great.
He is great.
He is so good.
And he gets all the, I mean, he's a villain that gets all the best lines.
Yes, and he chews up every bit of scenery he can.
Yeah. But not in a way over the top way. He's not Christopher Walkening it.
No. I love pretty much all of his choices in this movie.
Oh, yeah. So, Michelle Monaghan, Julia, is a hospital nurse. And during their engagement party, Ethan is contacted by the IMF Operations Director Musgrave, played by Billy Crudup from Almost Famous, who provides him with a disposable camera. And after viewing a video hidden in the camera, he finds out that Musgrave wants him to rescue Agent Lindsay Ferris. Lindsay Ferris is played by Kerry Russell from Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
I want the Lindsay Ferris movie.
I know you do. Lindsay is Ethan's protege, and she has been captured in Berlin by Owen Davian, Philip Seymour Hoffman. And Owen Davian is a prominent dealer in the international black market. Very, very ambiguous what he actually does. I mean, he's kind of, they talked to him about, like, what is it, QL Khan or whatever, that sold Pakistani nuclear things to North Korea or something. Or maybe sold stuff to Pakistan. I don't know, the real life guy. They're actually using that, but apparently he buys and sells all sorts of stuff. He's just a generic bad guy.
Yes, he is evil middleman.
Yes. So, Ethan reluctantly agrees to participating in the mission and meets the team which has been selected for him, consisting of Declan Gormley, played by Jonathan Rhys-Meyers, Jen, played by Maggie Q, and his old partner Luther, played by Ving Rhames. This is our first Jonathan Rhys-Meyers movie, I think.
Probably.
Yeah, I forget how good he is. Maggie Q's also pretty good.
Yeah.
I love Maggie Q.
Yeah. And Ving Rhames is Ving Rhames.
This version of Luther is a completely different character.
Than the second one?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, for certain. Well, partly because he's not the comic relief.
No.
Like, he doesn't get the Yakety Sax theme that appears every time you see him. So, the team assaults an enemy stronghold in Berlin. By the way, this assault on the warehouse in Berlin or whatever,
mm-hmm.
really fun.
All the action in this movie is really great.
Yeah.
J.J. Abrams, even though he may have destroyed Star Wars forever, really knows how to do action well.
I was going to say, it was obvious it was J.J. Abrams because of all of the lens flare.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. Hey, you got a signature. But, you know, even the things that I thought were going to be dumb, even on rewatch, I saw the rollerballs and I thought, oh no, rollerballs never spell good stuff in movies. But it was fun.
I love all of the little choreography that Kerry Russell and Tom Cruise had.
Oh, yeah, that's great. And that kind of comes out of nowhere. Because Tom mm-hmm. Cruise rescues Kerry Russell and is taking her out of this building. By the way, we're yada-yadding a really complicated series of action scenes. But when boiling it down to when he breaks inside, gets Kerry Russell, and is about to take her outside, she, of course, we know she's an agent. So when shit goes down, she just turns on that, she flips that agent switch, and you get to see her in a yeah. very brief appearance in this movie be kind of a badass.
She is a complete badass. Really made me miss the Americans.
I know, I felt very nostalgic.
I hear that's good.
Maybe the best television show of the last decade.
Have you really not seen it?
No, I haven't seen it. No, because it's like, what is it, like 18 seasons of 25 episodes apiece?
7 seasons of 10 episodes.
It's still like, it's a lot of time.
6 seasons? Is it only 6 seasons?
I think it's only 6 seasons. It's amazing. Seasons. You should watch it. It really is amazing. I'm actually contemplating rewatching it, except that it'll be way painful to rewatch it.
That intrigues me. So.
We should do it. We should do an episode per season.
There you go. Actually, if you guys do an episode per season, I can just listen to it and I'll get all my whole fix out of it. And it'll be great. This works out for all of us.
That would be disincentivizing you to watching it. We're not going to make it that easy on you.
Oh, this is not a punishment podcast.
Says you.
Yeah. What?
I was going to say, have you listened?
Yeah, nor is it an ASMR podcast.
That just sounded like a 76 diesel truck trying to start.
Yes, that makes people tingly.
Okay. By the way, I have another list of ASMR songs ready to go. So.
Oh, okay, cool.
Whenever somebody else wants to.
Yeah, I have to resurrect my first list because I have it. Okay, so again, yada yadaing a nice action scene. Ethan rescues Lindsay, but Lindsay has an explosive charge stuck in her brain, and. You know, for science reasons or whatever, it is detonated by the bad guys. And in maybe Kerry Russell's best acting move, she gets her eyeballs to go in different directions, which is pretty great.
First of all, how dare you? Second of all, the first time I watched this movie, that really got me.
It's a great little thing.
Like, if you don't know that's coming, that it's really upsetting.
Yeah.
It was quite jarring, even knowing it was coming. I mean, I knew it was coming, but yeah. And they didn't, the captors didn't set it off. They just started the timer and let it go. Oh, okay. So it wasn't like they remotely detonated because, you know, there's a time limit. It's a timer.
A ticking time bomb or a lit fuse.
What? It takes about 4 minutes once it's activated.
So. Yeah. Yeah. I was expecting it to more be like something that was geofenced.
Yes. I had to learn a lot about geofencing lately.
Did you?
Yeah. When you track a bunch of vehicles.
Ah.
You can have geofencing do things like tell you when they're arrived on scene.
That's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool.
It's also very Big Brother-y, which is...
Well, the vehicles we're tracking are owned by the government. They should be tracked very carefully.
I also have to remember, I wrote it down though this time, that Eric put a snippet in the last podcast where he pulled back from, he culled a bunch of quotes from, I guess, housekeeping and editing. Is that where, I assume you got it from there.
Well, no, it was, remember I had that file that, or I had a hard drive that had an issue, or I think maybe I threw away a folder or something. I don't know, something stupid I did. And I lost like a whole bunch of little clips I was keeping. One of which I still haven't told you about, Jason, because I want to resurrect it in some way, but it's going to be, it's just going to take some work, some time to do it. But I've been keeping this other file that are just kind of like funny lines and outtakes and stuff. I mean, they're not all funny. Like there's the big long thing where Drew describes his favorite type of movie.
What? That was just quotes from the Hobbs and Shaw trailer.
Yeah, still. You started the whole thing by it's got everything here. Like for example, and then, yeah, I'm sorry. So I interrupted. So Jason, I took something from you?
You put something out there, and one of the comments I had made in the podcast was like, remind me later, I have to tell you about the book that I got tricked into reading and I was pissed off about, and then I never paid it off. So, and I heard it, and I was like, oh man, I never did pay that off. Oh, so.
Was that during the big long thing where you had to leave in the middle? That thing at the end?
I don't know, maybe.
Probably.
Maybe. I can't, but you know what? I'm old. My memory isn't that good anymore.
Yeah, I edited it last week, and I can't. Maybe if it was the end, I didn't even listen to that part of it because I was still shoving stuff in the middle of it. Oh, are you kidding? That as soon as I heard the cornhole comment, I had to like, oh, where's this file? Because that has to go in there. And then I got to remember little funny things like never trust twins. Made me laugh. So Agent Ferris dies and he has to go back. Ethan has to go back and face this mission that didn't work out exactly as planned. And, you know, they were able to take some damaged computers with them, but they really didn't get much out of the mission otherwise. And there's, of course, the funeral for the agent and his new wife, because they got married before he went on the mission, right? Or was this, did he get married after the funeral?
I think they got married after.
Okay, yeah. Because,
but secret style, like Braveheart.
Yes, like Braveheart. I've never seen Braveheart, so.
What?
I'm sorry, I've never seen Braveheart. Lindsay sent him a package containing a microdot and blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah, Simon Pegg.
Yeah, yeah, we introduced to Simon Pegg, who's sort of the computer whiz. In the background, he's no Luther.
Right.
He's a little bumbling. He actually, I guess, turns into the comic relief, really.
He's the same character in the Star Trek movies.
Is he? Like he's Scotty. Scotty is the same sort of thing?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, since we like Simon Pegg, that was fine.
Yeah, no. It's good to see him.
So, using the information recovered from a laptop in the Berlin mission, Ethan decides to go after Davian himself, targeting him at a meeting in Vatican City, where a lucrative transaction involving a mysterious object codenamed the Rabbit's Foot is apparently taking place. Neither of Ethan's supervisors, directors Brazel, Lawrence Fishburne, or Musgrave, Billy Crudup, has authorized the mission. Before leaving, Ethan assures Julia of their relationship and promptly marries her at the hospital in a small ceremony. The team then arrives in Rome and sets off their elaborate plan to abduct Davian, barely avoiding disaster in the process. Again, this is yada-yadaing a ton of fun stuff at Vatican City.
Including the Ethan Hunt fall on a wire.
Yes. He falls on like six wires in this movie, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. They took advantage of that faux show. That's, you know, again, sort of dumb, but fun nonetheless. And the masks thing didn't irritate me as much.
Why? Because there wasn't as many?
Maybe. And although later, it's funny, I got tricked again in this movie, and I've seen it before. In a way, I should never, because it's a Mission Impossible movie. Everybody's wearing a mask, right?
Are you talking about the Julia scene?
Yes.
And you knew she's in later movies.
Yeah, true. Yeah, yeah. But again, and you know that Ethan's not going to die either, so, you know, anyway.
Is it Michelle Monaghan?
Yes.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. I like her.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. It turns out it would have been better if it was maybe Tandy Newton, or if we had met Michelle Monaghan in a prior movie. But I guess kind of having a meet cute off screen between movies is fine.
So I assume when you mentioned last week that Tandy Newton was supposed to be in this movie, I assume she was supposed to be the stand-in for the Lindsay Ferris character, where she dies in the beginning and that motivates Ethan.
Maybe. Yeah, that could be. Maybe. Or she could have been Maggie Q.
Yeah. But it's funny that you like The Mask better in this movie, even though John Woo was the last movie. They definitely gave it more of the face-off treatment in this movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, again, The Mask, maybe because they were so absurd, because how do you turn Tom Cruise into Philip Seymour Hoffman? They actually have different species of heads.
Is Philip Seymour Hoffman taller than Tom Cruise?
I think everybody is taller.
Not anymore, but was he?
He must be. Jason? Jason on the keyboards. Give us a little keyboard solo. Are you familiar with the song Hocus Pocus by the band Focus?
Nope.
No.
Well,
that's not a real thing.
Listeners, listen to this. Yeah, that's all. Makes me think of keyboards.
There's no way Tom Cruise is listed as 5'7". That's a lie.
How tall is Philip Seymour Hoffman listed as?
5'10".
Yeah. Okay. So Tom Cruise is 5'5".
So they're 5'5 and 5'8".
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Very good. I can't wait for Top Gun 2.
For real?
No. Okay. I can wait. I can wait forever.
For real over here.
Really?
It's going to be awesome.
Did you even see the movie when it came out? You would have been pretty... I mean, that was like junior high school for me.
Oh, but it was on cable forever.
Yeah, I've just seen Top Gun.
Oh,
and it was part of the Kenny Loggins film soundtrack.
Oh my God,
song era.
Yes,
I'm all right. Footloose,
a next level performance from Val Kilmer in Top Gun.
Oh yes,
so bizarre.
Also, it's funny, for 20-something years, I've heard one of my coworkers say, negative Ghost Rider, and I had no idea really where it came from. I thought maybe it came from the movie Ghost Rider. I didn't know. I actually looked it up, and sure enough, I had heard that before. Just a small thing. Anyway.
Oh.
Yeah. So, back to Mission Impossible. One thing Uncle John did say was that, you know, because he did say, you know, he's not really interested in all the movies we talk about, but usually the tangents were great to bring you along. I'm like, yeah, the tangents are the reason for the season. This episode will be especially pleasurable to those who like tangents. See the 6-minute headphones talk 3 minutes into the podcast.
Hey, you know, a hallmark of our podcast is that we never get straight to the point.
No, of course not. And why should we?
Because you're here for the journey.
It's not a race. It's a race.
A race. I'm winning. I'm winning. You know, Drew's favorite movie.
We need to bring back Wolfgang.
I bet Drew would love that.
I'm mother fucking heaven.
We should do the rat race redo. We should do a rat race commentary.
I say we should do a podcast entirely in our respective voices. You can pull out the sock puppet voice, and then Drew can do that voice, and then I can do Wolfgang. So we can just do an entire podcast like that.
What do I got?
Nobody would.
Hi, nobody, I'm Drew. I got a great ass. Yeah, that's about all.
Well,
actually, that's not.
Thank you.
Well, Merry Christmas.
Yeah, well, okay, that's not exactly where I was headed, but sometimes the characters have a life of their own. Okay, so
Beep.
You leave that in.
Okay, so we have this whole scene in the Vatican. It's pretty fun.
I appreciated the part where they actually were making him read the card for the voice coding. I thought that was actually a nice detail.
I also love the fact that Drew, you were talking about choices. Philip Seymour Hoffman's choice is always when confronted with like some sort of crazy IMF, like over the top violent disaster. He's like, not this. Like, are you kidding me?
He eye rolls his way through the entire movie. Yeah. To such perfect effect.
Exactly. He's like, being even when tortured, he's like, come on, man. What are we doing here?
Yeah. When they have him in the plane, that's one of my favorite choices of his.
Yes.
When they bring him back in and he's just sitting there like, you hung me out of an airplane. And then he goes on to make a very chilling threat.
Yes. A very detailed threat. So, blah, blah, blah. Turns out, I did yada yada a whole bunch of it. They abduct Davian, and on the flight home, Tom Cruise breaks the Geneva Convention, as among other things, and dangles him out of a plane in order to extract information from him. Anyway, I don't think the United States is a signatory to the Geneva Convention. Anyway, so, and yeah, that's where Davian gives that chilling threat. So then we get a scene where they are transporting Davian across the Chesapeake Bay Bridge in a convoy, and we have the Davian rescue, I guess, or the Davian breakout scene or whatever.
I watched when I first rented this movie on video, way back in the day. That was back before children, so I had more time on my hands, and I would watch a lot of the special features. And this movie had a really cool one, and it made me really appreciate like J.J. Abrams is a filmmaker, because he was really smart. I mean, again, up until now when he destroyed Star Wars, he was really smart and judicious about how he used CGI to enhance his movie. Like he really wanted things to be as practical as possible. And this bridge scene was a perfect example of that, because he talked about how it's impossible to find a place to shoot on a bridge where he wanted to get all the shots and have practical explosions and stuff. So what he did is he built a bridge. He built the entire bridge set out in the desert and then CGI'd in the water, because he knew nobody's going to be looking at the water. So you don't have to like break your CGI budget to make it like the perfect water. It just needs to be good enough, because nobody's actually going to be looking at it. And then he has this awesome bridge set that he can do anything with.
Yeah, that is clever. And to think he destroyed Star Wars. Have you seen the last movie, Drew?
I have not.
Okay.
I loved his first Star Wars movie, though.
They have the escape, which, again, is pretty fun stuff. Pretty great action scenes. A little bit of a Final Destination sort of feel to it. If you've seen the Final Destination movies. Mm-hmm. There's one that actually involves a bridge. But yeah, just kind of fun. Also, by the way, during this weekend, last night, in fact, I watched Maximum Overdrive, and I'd forgotten there's a bridge scene in that too.
How did that one hold up?
You know, it's funny because it's a bad movie, obviously, because it's a bad premise, but and it's got tons of problems, but it's fun. I mean, it's the from start to finish, it's a fun movie.
Well, that's good.
And Emilio Estevez is doing his Charlie Sheen or his Martin Sheen impression. Like he's playing his dad in Apocalypse Now.
Kinda. That's funny.
Except less military, but yeah. I mean, it is. He's like young Martin Sheen. It's great. It's like, what happened to that guy? Turns out he went the other way from his other brother. Okay, so blah, blah, blah. Davian escapes and has abducted Julia. So now things are getting back to the first scene where Davian has a gun to Julia's head, trying to get Ethan to tell him the location of the rabbit's foot. So he's got to go to Shanghai. And is it cynical of me? Or is it just, was it naive of me not to think of this until now in 2019? But is it cynical of me to think, okay, the reason why all this stuff is shot in Shanghai is because they're going to sell a shit ton of tickets in China. So the Chinese government are never going to be bad guys, but they're going to have plenty of Chinese actors and Chinese locations in there.
Most movies nowadays, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. And God forbid you are in a profession like, oh, I don't know, a professional athlete and say something the least bit critical of the Chinese government, who is maybe performing a genocide right now. Anyway.
Oh, not an athlete. Front office.
No, but I'm talking about the soccer player now.
Oh.
I think an Arsenal player. Yeah, an Arsenal player said something. And yeah, they threatened to do the same thing to Arsenal that they did to the Rockets. So anyway, we live in strange times.
By the way, the United States signed the Geneva Convention in 1955.
Okay, I'm wrong.
And then the Protocol 1 and Protocol 1 and Protocol 3 they have signed but not ratified, whatever that means. So I guess there's been ratifications, but well, yeah. So we're kind of on board with it.
Well.
Fascinating list, though.
Of countries? Or of and conditions?
Countries and applications of such.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, Vietnam has citation. The state of Palestine has a citation that's probably 50 lines long. Anyway, I digress.
So, Ethan has to go to Shanghai and steal the rabbit's foot and then deliver it to Davian. And, we get the whole big action set piece of Tom Cruise swinging into the building and baseballs and all sort of fun stuff.
Yeah, well done.
Yeah.
Well,
big,
well timed.
Big splashy action scenes, yeah. Which, again, work. They're fine. And so then Ethan goes and needs to meet Davian, and who gives him is made to drink a substance which knocks him out, and he wakes up with an explosive charge getting injected into his head, and Julie and Ethan are standing opposite each other, looking at each other, bound to chairs, and Davian is threatening to kill Julia if he's not told the location of the rabbit's foot. So Ethan insists that he's delivered it, but after this whole very tense scene, very well done scene, Davian executes Julia. So after Davian leaves, by the way, I kind of missed the whole part, the subterfuge where for the first three quarters of the movie, you get the idea that Lawrence Fishburne is the bad guy.
Yeah, that worst part of this movie. That did not work.
No.
There's no way Billy Crudup was not the bad guy from the very first scene.
True. But it's always nice that because, you know, because Lawrence Fishburne, as we learned from actually the Hannibal series, he actually can play a good
demanding supervisor.
Yeah, a demanding supervisor, but also like a hard-edged good guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So,
yeah, this movie actually did make me miss his Jack Crawford.
Yeah. So Musgrave enters, Billy Crudup again, lead guitar, and he is a golden god and is also a traitor, and explains the whole situation a la Bond villain to Ethan.
Mm-hmm. He's like, first thing I did was leave my wife when she was 7 months pregnant.
And then he shows that Julia was actually one of Davian's incompetent personnel wearing a mask. So that they had to make sure that Ethan brought the real rabbit's foot. So Julia is still alive and Ethan escapes and uses Musgrave's phone to track Julia's location down with the assistance of Benji, Simon Pegg. And we have lots of running and, you know, typical Tom Cruise action stuff. All very good. And he finds Julia, but before he can free her, the bomb in his head is activated. And then we have the fist fight scene where Philip Seymour Hoffman, he is encumbered by, you know, the extra 150 pounds that he has on Tom Cruise. But Tom Cruise is encumbered by the fact that he's got a bomb in his head. So it's about a fair fight.
Yes, he eventually, Ethan Hunt uses headache jitsu to win the fight.
Yes. Actually, headache jitsu and sort of a Pep Boys sort of technique.
Pet Boys?
Maybe Jiffy Lube is a better...
Are you talking about the electricity in the bowl kind of thing?
No. I'm talking about rolling under a car that's driving along the street.
Oh, I see.
You were a grease monkey in a pit. Oh. And Philip Seymour Hoffman is not. Now, Drew, you intimated earlier that you were displeased by this ending of his character.
Yeah, it sort of echoes complaints I have about a lot of superhero movies, where in superhero movies you might have a hero and a villain who have really cool superpowers, but the plot always ends up with them just punching the crap out of each other, no matter what their powers are. So I thought a movie with like criminal mastermind with like who oozes smarm like Davian, I thought it was a little beneath him to end up in a fist fight with Ethan Hunt.
Well, that makes sense. And yeah, because like sort of to take a different tack on your superhero thing, you never like a film should never end with Superman and Lex Luthor in a fist fight.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I guess maybe they have what with Kryptonite and whatnot, but still.
Right. Another example is like the Transformers movies.
Haven't seen a single one.
I've only seen a couple, but so the conceit is you have these amazing alien robots that can transform into all manner of things. But the end of the movies are just the robots punching the crap out of each other. It makes no sense.
Yeah, I guess you could say a lot of Godzilla movies are just that.
Yeah.
Actually, for the most part, all but three of the Godzilla movies are like that. So it's sort of a cheap ending.
Yeah. Yeah. I wanted more. But also, as previously noted, J.J. Abrams, not known for really sticking the landing.
Did you not like his Star Trek either?
Did he do the last one?
I haven't seen the last one. I don't know.
Was it Into Darkness?
Jason on Keys?
Oh, he did. Yeah, that one's terrible.
Okay. It's funny. Sorry. When I see the Bad Robot production logo, I know it's going to be a decent time, right? Like, I never go, oh, when I see that. I always go, huh.
If it's the first one. It'll be a decent time.
Okay.
What is Mr. Abrams working on right now? Half-Life. He's making a movie based on the game?
I'm sure.
Oh.
Isn't the... Okay, here's a bunch of knowledge that could possibly be completely wrong. But isn't Half-Life 2 has been... considered one of the best games ever, and people have been waiting for Half-Life 3, but yes. Instead they got something else is coming instead, maybe with a VR element. Yeah, with some sort of VR right?
That's why I bought a VR headset for myself for my birthday.
Yeah, so people love Half-Life.
I'm a huge Half-Life 2 fan.
Yeah.
I have played Half-Life 2 countless times, and all of the little add-on missions many times. It's a fantastic game.
Interesting.
Anyway, but also he's apparently making a Portal movie, which I can't believe.
Well, he's just a producer, right? I mean, he's a producer on a crap ton of stuff.
All right. It's horrific if that's the case. My God. Okay, I don't know how much of this is accurate, of course. It's IMDb, so you know, whatever. He's working on Quentin Tarantino's untitled Star Trek project.
Oh, yes.
I assume that's just like a inherited producer credit.
Oh.
He's working on They Both Die at the End.
I've always wondered what Spock's feet look like.
He's working on
Uhura's feet.
He's working on untitled Cloverfield sequel. He's working on Mission Impossible 8 and Mission Impossible 7, which is in pre-production right now, apparently.
Did he do all? Has he done all the rest of the Mission Impossible movies after 3?
As a producer.
Okay, but not as a director. Got it. Okay.
No, Christopher McQuarrie has been the producer, been the director.
Yeah, so Ethan, just to get to the end of this movie, because I do have a quibble at the end of it. Ethan figures the only way he can deactivate the bomb in his head is by killing himself. But since Julia is a doctor, she can resuscitate him, bring him back to life, and everything will be fine. And she does. And then we have the whole that whole thing that people complain about the Batman movie, where Vicki Vale just gets let in the Batcave. Like, Tom Cruise just gives up all of his national secrets to his wife. I think he has sworn an oath not to do that sort of thing. But all of a sudden, she's showing up at work and shaking hands and kissing babies, and everybody's... They have, like, almost a... like a freeze frame, Breakfast Club sort of freeze frame at the end. So Tom Cruise is, of course, going on his honeymoon. And Larry Fishburne says, well, we got a project. And Tom Cruise says, if you tell me the rabbit's foot is, I'll consider it. That's where it's left. It's like, eh, have a nice honeymoon. Dun, 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 dun.
Really?
I'm really happy that this movie was so good. Not only because it needed a course correction after Mission Impossible 2, but because it gave us the rest of the series. I mean, the series takes another kind of left turn after this movie. It starts going more serialized, a little bit darker. But yeah, I think Philip Seymour Hoffman saved this franchise.
Yeah, could be. Jason, could be. Any more notes?
I took no notes.
Excellent.
I like your style.
What's your verdict?
This was a pretty good movie. Like I said, I actually didn't hate it. Again, my point of reference in the last couple of movies may have reset my gauge, but this is a minus kind of movie.
Excellent. Drew, was it worth it?
It's absolutely worth it. I love every scene Philip Seymour Hoffman's in.
I think arguably this is the movie that justified us watching the first two movies. Yes. Because the first two movies on their own were not worth watching, really. I mean, I didn't really like the first one, and the second one really blew.
So the first one was worth watching if you were a fan of the show, except for the ending.
Yeah.
Because I was a big fan of the show, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, this was the movie I was looking forward to getting through the first two movies to watch.
So, Mission Impossible 3. Well, we will have to do Ghost Protocol coming up here shortly. We actually have to talk about calendar stuff because I don't even think we have a movie on the calendar.
There is not.
So, do we want to go right to Ghost Protocol? Are we all available next week?
I'm available next week.
I'm available, yeah.
Okay, excellent. So, on to housekeeping. So... let's see. I'm going to tie up my housekeeping. I'm going to tie up some loose ends here. Journey's mouth surgery went pretty great. I mean, it was not a pleasant experience, but it was fine. She actually had, I think I described before, how they were putting two anchors or an anchor on each of her upper canines and then some chains to drag them down to the right place. Well, the chains were sewn into the little flaps so that they wouldn't fall down until she goes to see the orthodontist in another week here. But they came down early. So on Friday, I took her to the surgeon's office just for a checkup. And they were going to just do just give her some quick Novocaine and then sew those back up. Yeah, that didn't work. So again, we went to this.
The Novocaine didn't work?
No, she wouldn't let him shoot her with the Novocaine.
Oh.
And... turns out you can't fight with somebody who wants to fight with you when you have a needle near their head.
Yes.
So we had to call off a second procedure in that guy's office. Turns out he doesn't want to see us either. I'm sure we paid for that visit too. Cause we had some mouth numbing stuff in her mouth and, but she just totally had like a, I don't know, was it a panic attack or just a flight reaction that, oh yeah, she was not safe and she was not letting them do anything. And it wasn't going to happen. So, like, huh. So we, Kelly and I and Journey somewhat, were having a conversation about how, you know, nobody likes needles and stuff, but there's going to be times in your life, in fact, coming up soon probably, where we're going to need blood work done on you, and you're going to have to get blood taken, or you have to get a booster shot at some point, and you're not going to be, you know, like, You have to be able to somehow, some way, just like close your eyes and get through it. Just grit your teeth and get through it, because you won't be able to fight people off forever. Or maybe she will. I don't know. We'll see. It seems complicated, but otherwise her mouth is...
She's been successful so far.
Well, exactly. Yeah. She's got history on her side, but her mouth is healing fine. And yesterday was the first day day before yesterday was the first day she could walk without a boot on her foot. So since very first time exciting. Since September that she could actually wear shoes on both feet. That was nice. So she was a little,
congratulations.
She was a little tired walking around, but otherwise she's fine. So yeah, so that's, that's my housekeeping.
I'll go next. Not much has been going on with me. I've been spending a lot of time out at the lake house. Been watching a lot of like family Christmas movies. So like we watched The Muppets Christmas Carol, which is really good. I haven't seen it in probably 30 plus years. It's good. Michael Caine is amazing. Also watched Home Alone. I'd never seen Home Alone.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it was pretty good. It was funny.
You know, Canadian TV got in trouble about Home Alone 2.
I did hear about that.
Did you That's hear about funny. That, Jason?
No.
Canadian TV played Home Alone 2, and they edited the Donald Trump cameo out of the movie. Which is just sort of hilarious.
I kind of applaud that, though. I kind of really, I dig that.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, but it's sort of unnecessary, and I don't know.
Well, what was their rationale behind it?
They edited it for time, and that version first appeared like in 2014.
Oh, okay. So, okay, cool. See, I didn't hear that part of it. I just thought it was a strictly 2019 hit job.
Well, that's what our president was tweeting about.
It's like, I can't pay attention to those because they come so fast.
Yeah, but this may shock you, but he may have pulled the trigger before having all the facts.
There we go, yeah.
But other than that, all right. Our dog had his big surgery. He's doing okay.
Excellent.
Now, did you have a traditional neuter?
I think so. Is there a different kind?
Well, our mother was under the impression he just had a vasectomy. I'm like, I don't think they do that. But so.
No. Eric actually asked me if we got nudicles, which I didn't know were a thing.
Oh, they're a thing.
We did not. We did not get them.
They were a thing mainly for show dogs that had to have surgery. So even though now I think the breed standard doesn't require them, it used to be a breed standard thing.
But probably just in time, because we found out he has a girlfriend out here in Willow.
Oh. Yeah. Good to know.
Yeah. Do you have a GPS collar for him yet?
Not yet.
I'd recommend that.
But we drove into Wasilla today, so when we left him here, so we recreated him, and then on our way out the driveway, there's this kind of off-white dog standing in the woods next to our driveway, looking at us, and my wife's like, "Oh, yep, that's her." She hasn't seen him in a while, so she came down to our property. But we had a good Christmas. We missed you, Jason.
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you for the camera. I appreciate it.
Anytime.
The girls love their dragons.
They do. The dragons are great.
Do they? I'm glad.
Yeah.
I know it's not as big as the drones, but I can't be drones every year. So.
Yeah. No. Well, no, you know, because we have a dog that gets freaked out by things like drones, so the dragon's great.
We have a dog that gets freaked out by things like the dragons.
Ah, perfect.
Oh.
Which delights my daughters to no end.
Yeah, of course.
Originally, I was going to be the bad mean uncle and buy them. There's this toy that I could have bought them, and it's kind of like the Spherio balls that I bought them a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. That are their action. They have built-in motion, self-propelled kind of balls, but they only move when you're making noise at them, and the louder you get, the faster they go. So that would have just encouraged a bunch of screaming. So, but I thought that
we have something like that, except they're little spider robots.
Yes, I've heard of those too.
Yes, I think they might actually be called Screamies.
Oh, so I opted not for that, I thought
thank you.
I was gonna like, well, as much as I think it would be funny for about 5 minutes, I would hate to have to. So yeah, no.
It was all I could do. And today I even told Journey, I said, you know, just so you're aware, it's rude to ask somebody to compliment you about something, but I'm gonna do it anyway. Because it was all I could do. I wanted to do this. I wanted so much to do this. But coworkers suggested it was a bad idea. My wife suggested it was a bad idea. My mother was horrified about it. So I didn't do it. But it's all I could do. It's because we gave her a plush after her surgery. And turns out it was a Jellycat unicorn. Jellycat's a brand. Very cool. Unicorns, you know, she likes unicorns. She was very happy with it. What I wanted to get her is the dragon from the How to Train Your Dragon. Toothless.
Toothless?
Yes. But
that would have been hilarious.
Yeah, I thought it was hilarious, except that at her age and temperament, she could have very well just look straight at me and burst into tears.
I was going to say, yeah. You were channeling Dad.
No, it's great. So
That's like, I can draw a straight line.
Mom got the grandkids some snowshoes. Turns out they're really nice.
Oh.
We got them out, and the girls went and used them on the... We had a bunch of snow on Christmas Day, actually. We had a bunch of snow, so they actually went out and tried them out on the lake yesterday. Yeah, they're super nice, super easy to use for kids. It's great.
And your lake is plenty frozen over now?
Yeah, we actually have, we've seen two different people ice fishing.
Oh, wow.
So on Christmas Day, an ice fishing tent appeared like right in the middle of the lake.
Well, that's pretty cool.
I thought that was a good indicator that we could actually go out.
Yeah.
I went out and shoveled a big area near our dock to see if we could maybe do some ice skating. But shovel it. But the ice is actually really bumpy. So if we're actually going to do ice skating, I might actually have to get out there with like a ghetto Zamboni and maybe pour some water on it and kind of squeegee it around. Which actually I should have done yesterday or maybe even this morning because it got down to like negative 12.
Oh boy.
Today, which would have been perfect to do that type of activity, except I don't want to be outside doing it when it's negative 12.
I was going to say, so, and you have to carry, didn't happen. You have to carry the water down there fairly, you know, expediently. Yes. You can't dawdle.
Yeah.
Plus you'd have to fill it up inside your house because you don't want to be doing an outside hose.
Right. Yeah. No, definitely no outside hoses. But what else? We also got the girls' hoverboards. They are, you know what hoverboards are?
I'm not sure. Are those they're segways but without the pole?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And they are amazing on them. I don't know. Those little kid brains, they took right to them. They're like zipping all around the house.
Well, it's also little kid equilibrium. I mean,
yeah.
It's nuts. Super responsive because, you know, they've got the super inner ear. Yeah. At my age, I would get on it and break a hip. So,
I did try it and I suffered like the most stereotypically ridiculous like middle-aged injury. You know, it's basically two pieces connected in the middle that pivot.
Yeah.
So one for each foot, and so when you try and get on, you know, it activates with pressure, and if you step on one end and you're tilting forward or backward, that one side will move. Oh, so God. If it starts to move while you're lifting up your other foot to put your second foot on the other foot pad, if you're middle-aged like me and uncoordinated, you will lose your balance and wrench your back trying not to fall and take the Christmas tree out your big, huge window.
Oh.
So, yeah, I tried that, and then the entire next day I was, like, walking around like an old man because my back hurt. It was so stupid.
I've seen them around, but there's no way. I'm klutzy enough on two feet. I think the bongo board is about as much as I'm willing to try my balance on anything.
Yeah, no, they're super fun, but I have been shamed by my inability to pick it up as quickly as my children that I will never try it again.
Well, let's see. What did I have? I've started listening to a new podcast. Only when I'm caught up on ours, of course. And it's called Ask Me Another. Are either of you familiar with it?
Yeah, you sent me the link and I've listened to about a dozen of them already.
It's amazing. So there's a million of them. I started all the way back in 2015, but I'm really digging it.
What's the premise?
It's a quiz show. It's an NPR quiz show, a trivia. But it's stupid smart.
And it's stupid. It's got a celebrity guest, but the celebrities aren't contestants.
Yeah. Well, it's for the most part, but Jonathan Colton, you're familiar with Jonathan Colton, is the band basically, and they do a lot of stuff that involves musical misdirection or musical hints or musical answers, which actually hint at the answer, but change song lyrics to make a clue. I'm describing this very poorly, but
he's
highly recommend
good at this stuff.
He's very, it's totally his wheelhouse.
Is there a particular guest or episode that you think is the best?
I couldn't identify the best one, but there's an Andy Serkis one that's pretty funny. Because Andy Serkis describes how he arrived at his voice in the Lord of the Rings.
Oh, okay.
And he talks about, he talks about Planet of the Apes as well. So, I'm really enjoying it. So, and there's years of them at this point. So I started in 2015 and I'm working my way forward slowly. And some of them are just really funny. I mean, absolutely. Some of the stuff they come up with is super funny, which is sometimes not always the case with NPR stuff. They want to be funny and they don't. But the host, Ophira Eisenberg, she must be some kind of, I don't know anything about her, but she must have some kind of comedic background because she's always got a quip. So, and her voice reminds me of Maren Cadell. Her voice and mannerisms. So, anyway, I will mention the book that I got tricked into listening to.
Oh,
so,
yes.
I got this, I got a recommendation based on apparently my quote unquote listening habits from my audio book program listener between Audible and Libby, which I use. I got this thing that said you would be interested based on your preferences in this book, and I read the synopsis and I'm like, all right, all right, and then I think it was like an Audible like $1.99 special, and I thought, all right, I'll buy it for $2. You know, I don't drink coffee every day, so this will be my cup of coffee for today. I'll spend $2 and whatever. And I'm listening to the book and I'm getting through it. I'm like, I don't know. This book is fine, but it's like, it's okay. Like, there's something about the writing style that I can't put my finger on it, but I'm not digging it. I don't know why. I finished the book regardless. I got all the way through it. And then come to find out, it's written by Stephanie Meyer. And I was just, I said, you know, you could have at least put in that this book is, you know, authored by Stephanie Meyer, also author of The Twilight Saga. So I could have said, yeah, I don't think so. But instead I was tricked. So that's what I get for not looking a little further.
And what was it called?
The Chemist.
So did it have kind of a Mormon thing going on, or?
No, but it had a strange plot twist in it that I saw coming as soon as it was described in the beginning of the book. Like, as soon as this special thing was described in the beginning of the book, I'm like, oh, well, that's how this book's going to end. And so I spent the rest of the book knowing what was coming, which a couple of my friends who have read the Twilight books are like, oh yeah, you can totally, like, it's all just pulpy drac that you know what's happening. So
it wasn't fun either?
It wasn't, I mean, it wasn't awful, but it just wasn't. I did.
Okay, so.
I did. I didn't finish the latest Bourne book because of what Drew told me, so. Because I was like, nope.
Yeah, I wish I hadn't finished it.
I'm glad you told me. I would have been pissed. I'd have been totally pissed. So, but.
I bought a BBC series called HR. It's kind of a comedy series, but I think maybe it's particularly English in its comedic sensibilities. It's about a HR guy in a corporation, and he's the main character, or maybe he's the secondary character, but the main character is like a politically incorrect employee of that corporation. So obviously hijinks ensue. But I think after the second season, I got like seasons 1 through 5 in one big set. After the second season, they no longer work for the corporation and they're roommates. So it becomes kind of a different thing. And it's interesting, but sometimes it goes sort of dark. It's very weird.
So it like spun off into a new show.
Kind of. I mean, it was always sort of a buddy show, but yeah, they're no longer having to deal with anything involving HR. Now we just have these two characters, sort of an odd couple thing.
Apparently they liked the characters, but didn't like the storylines.
Or maybe they wrote themselves into the corner.
Maybe. Maybe BBC's weird because sometimes, well, I shouldn't say sometimes, a lot of the times, you know, they only make stuff for one season.
Yeah, and which, by done. The way, is fine. That's great. Yeah. You know, like Ultraviolet. Have you seen Ultraviolet?
No, I haven't, but I haven't gotten to it yet.
Yeah, it's short, but it's fun. It's got one of the most interesting episodes on vampirism I've ever seen, but we can't talk about it if you haven't seen it, so.
Yeah. I'm trying to think what other BBC series that I finished recently. I can't. It doesn't come to mind. I did watch. I don't know that was BBC, though. Our mother recommended it to me.
My wife and I are a couple episodes into the last season of a Breaking Bad rewatch.
Oh. Is that in preparation to watch El Camino?
Yes, she'd only watched like the first season and a half of Breaking Bad before, so that came out, and so she was interested in rewatching the whole and finishing it up. So we've been doing that. It's so good, such a good show. But you guys have both seen it, right?
Nope, not a single episode.
Eric hasn't seen any of it.
I won't mention anything then. But
yeah, that's another thing you need to watch because that's awesome. Now. Have no illusion.
That's really good.
Have no illusion. There is no hero in Breaking Bad. No one is a hero.
I don't know. I don't know about that. But I will say I know how it ends, and I'm in a place now where like all the people I like are relatively happy, and I'm just like, we should quit here.
Breaking, I think I've mentioned before, Breaking Bad was one of the things. I was at a friend's house for the weekend, spending the weekend in the boonies without a cell phone or internet service. So he was like, hey, have you ever watched Breaking Bad? And I was like, no. He's like, we should watch the first season if you haven't seen it. And then, you know, I was like, okay. And I was like, well, we'll watch episode. He's like, yeah, right. And so we sat down. It was like 10 o'clock at night. And then we watched the entire first season. I couldn't stop watching it. So in a single sitting-ish, over one night into the next very early morning, I watched the entire first season.
Well, the first season is very BBC-esque because it's only 7 episodes.
Right.
So Breaking Bad or Americans?
Oh, the Americans.
Both.
Yeah, but...
I'd start with the Americans.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Americans will give you a nostalgia factor.
Like Stranger Things sort of thing?
I haven't seen Although
I haven't seen the third season of Stranger Things. I heard it's good, but I don't know. It's like sometimes I push that stuff off on purpose.
The Americans has got a nostalgia value because of the setting and the aesthetic, but they get it right. I mean, it kind of does really bring you back.
It's also a surprisingly accurate portrayal of a marriage.
Hmm. You think so?
I do. I mean, they have extraordinary circumstances that they deal with, but they also have to deal with like real life marriage shit.
Yeah, I guess it's
that kind of stuff and like parenting stuff and that kind of stuff I thought was handled really well.
Now I'm doing fine right now, but if it takes me to a take shelter place, I'm going to be really pissed.
Hello, ladies.
Hi.
What? How's the movie?
Good. Good.
What did you watch?
Abominable.
And what was your favorite thing about it?
Nine-Eye hiding behind the pork buns.
Okay.
As you do.
Probably making those tissues my babies.
All right. All right, there is your bonus abominable review.
Excellent.
Oh. Bye-bye.
All right.
Bye.
Have a good night.
Do you remember that BBC clip where they were interviewing this guy from his home office or whatever?
Yes.
And you see a child come bursting in. Do you remember this, Jason?
Yes.
My favorite part of that is the outrage because they assumed the lady who came running after to grab the child was his nanny because she was Asian and he wasn't. He's like, no, that's my wife.
Oh.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
So the series that I saw, it was done by the BBC. All right. I don't think it's very many episodes. I think it's just 4 episodes. It's The City and the City.
The City and the City. The City in
the City. The City and the City.
Oh, okay.
It's some strange sci-fi weird. It was weird, but I thought it was pretty good. So,
I told you guys about The Forest, right? The French series, The Forest.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, it's worth seeing. It only has 1 season. I think it's on Netflix. It's pretty great. It's like a crime thriller set in France, sort of rural France, small town. So, Law and Order meets Twin Peaks.
Oh, well, interesting.
No, it's not quite as wacky as Twin Peaks.
David Lynch and company released a Twin Peaks VR experience.
Ah. That you can watch on your computer?
I have started it. I had to put it down because it scared the shit out of me. So I'll go back to it at some point, but being as right now, I can only really play it after I get home from work, really. It is dark outside. I can't do it. It scares me too much. But I ended up on the train car and I'm like, oh no, I can't do this. No. So yeah. Plus technically it puts you in the head of David Lynch, which is a little scary. So I'll get back to it. Otherwise I'm playing a couple different VR games, so it's been fun. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, that's been your big thing was the VR experience.
I'm amazed by it. So
sweet. Do you think it's going to be everywhere soon?
I don't know. I mean, you have to have a decently fast computer to be able to run one, or you have to buy like a Sony PlayStation and a Sony PlayStation VR. So I think it largely depends on what kind of experience you want. The reason that I bought the specific Oculus set that I bought is because it's all self-contained. You don't have to have any external equipment because some of the Oculus sets, you have to like put room sensors. You have to put sensors in your ceiling and in your floor to orient the VR. So the VR knows when you're moving. And mine, you do not. And my vision is just not bad enough yet that I can actually get away with using it without my contacts in.
Oh, sweet.
So
Oh, too blind to go VR. That would be a sad state of affairs.
Well, Jesse has to wear his glasses, and it's fine. Like, I can wear my glasses and use it too. But I yeah, you can. It fits around your head. It's got a foam rim around the head goggle set, so when you put it on, you could it's totally comfortable to wear your glasses. It's cool. I think it's designed smartly enough that, or wisely enough, I guess, probably that they accounted that there are going to be enough nerds out there that are going to have glasses that are going to be using the VR.
Sweet.
They know their market.
Yeah.
So
anything else in housekeeping? I mean, we can end it right here if you want.
Well, I can attempt this. We'll see how painful this is. We'll see if I can get through this. For anyone who knows, Derek, Christmas night, Derek appeared to have a massive heart attack and passed away. He had been at home with us, Jesse and I. We were all home. And this was later in the evening. It was about 11 o'clock, 11:30. And he said he didn't feel good. And he took some ibuprofen, and then he was complaining to me, like, because I have some medical knowledge, he came out, he's like, I've got this weird pain. And I said, well, you know, what kind of weird pain? He's like, I don't know, like, my chest hurts. And so then I started the interrogation, like, are you having, you know, limb numbness? Are you having chest pains? Is it squeezing? Is it stabbing? Are you having hot flashes? Are you short of breath? And he goes, I'm not sure. So I took his blood pressure, because I have a blood pressure machine, and it was a little high, and his pulse was a little high. So I said, you know, let's go to the hospital. And he said, okay. So he went downstairs to put some clothes on, because he'd been sleeping. Unfortunately, when I grabbed some aspirin to take him some baby aspirin to chew on the way to the hospital. And as I went down the stairs to get him, he was passing, in front of me, in the basement getting clothes, and then he collapsed. Even though I started CPR immediately and Jesse helped, we called an ambulance and they arrived about 4 minutes later. They spent about 45 minutes trying to get a pulse, and then took him to Adventist Hospital, where they worked on him and unfortunately couldn't revive him. Whatever happened was so severe that he just couldn't be brought back. I give the paramedics credit for trying as much as they did, because they certainly, there were seven of them in my basement working on him, and they were definitely trying everything they could. So, plus they had to carry him up a very narrow set of stairs, and he's not a small or light guy. Interesting to note that they have automated chest compression machines.
They used a Lucas machine on him?
Yeah. So,
I mean, obviously,
I didn't know that's what it's called.
It's horrifying, but it's interesting technology.
No, I'm a technology guy. I'm much more comfortable with the machine doing it.
Maybe
that's me, but I was much more comforted with not having to see somebody else do it. Having performed CPR myself, I can only imagine what it's like to have to do something for any length of time, because the few minutes that I did it felt like it was an hour, and I was exhausted. So,
I'm sure, yeah.
But we went to the hospital, and when we got there, they ushered us immediately into a room, and I told Jesse, I'm like, yeah, this is a bad sign. this is what it means. And then the nurse came in and told us what had happened, and we had to wait around a couple hours because we had to wait for some of the other nurses to ask us more questions, and then the medical examiner wanted to talk to us. So, because he was a stubborn guy, he never went to the doctor, so he doesn't have any medical history, the medical examiner said the coroner is probably going to require an autopsy because he doesn't have any history. He doesn't by definition then have any history of heart problems or problems that would have caused his sudden death. So, which I understand. So,
and he just turned 50.
He was 50 in October. So, but unfortunately he was also a 2 to 3 pack a day smoker and he drank probably more than he should. So, unfortunately, I think those were probably contributing factors. Even though he was physical at work, I think we know that smoking and drinking are two very hard things on your artery. So, again, I don't know what the cause of death is. The coroner hasn't released anything. There is going to be a service at some point. It will be in Portland. His dad and... three sisters. I'm in contact with all of them, but his dad and his one sister, who I'm closest with, have talked about arrangements so far, and they both agreed that because Derek's life has been in Portland for 20 plus years, that it makes sense to have it out here where the most people will be able to see him and say goodbye. So right now, there is no immediate plan, so I imagine there will be something probably within a couple months, but I don't think it's going to be in January, because there's going to be it's a huge undertaking, and it will be he will have a cremation, and there will be a ceremony, so people who want to attend the cremation can witness the casket going in. There will be some kind of tribal ceremony that also occurs. There will be a smudging. And then we'll probably have a reception somewhere else, because I suspect a lot of Derek's friends would be super uncomfortable at a funeral, but much more comfortable in a locale where they can kind of be casual and have a beer and kind of just chat. Because he worked with a construction crew of like 40, 50 guys, so... I don't imagine a lot of them are going to want to come to the funeral. But right now, I believe all of Derek's immediate family will be coming out to Portland. So so that's going to be something, because they've not all been here before. So so right now, I'm just kind of in a holding pattern. I don't have probate yet for the estate. There wasn't a will. But the family has already said that they were going to sign everything over to me. So
that's going to be very, very helpful.
Yes and no. It makes me responsible for everything. Yes, it means I can do everything I need to, but that also means I have to do everything.
True.
Short term, not a lot going to change. And obviously I'm not making any huge life decisions today, but, I've already spoken to Jesse, and the likelihood that, this will, drastically accelerate my moving back to Alaska. I can't see staying in this house for a tremendous amount of time. It'll be super uncomfortable. It's already kind of uncomfortable for me. It's hard. But having to pack up a move, knowing that I'm going to pack up a move in a couple years, just doesn't appeal to me. So in the next year, I'm probably going to start selling off everything I own here, minimizing, and we'll probably start making plans to come north. So I left it to Jesse to decide. It's up to him if he wants to come with or not. I'm not going to pressure him either way, but I've known for some time and said clearly since before Jesse and I were seriously dating that my long-term goal was to come back to Alaska anyway. So this isn't a surprise to him that I would be going back. I just think it is sooner than either of us had expected. But family is important, and I now have a little less family. So the family I have left is where I want to be.
thank you for sharing. I'm really sorry you went through that. And I'm actually really impressed about how put together you are right now. I'm sure it comes and goes, but
this is probably the longest I've gone without crying. The 2 hours we've spent here is probably the longest period in the last 48 hours. The worst part is, I think, that it happened, you know, the night of Christmas, although I don't associate this with Christmas, because technically I don't think his time of death was until the 26th, so I'll blame Canada and the UK for Boxing Day. But the good out of it, which I know is... the good thing that I take from it is that I was the last person that he saw. So he was with somebody that cared about him as much as he loved life. So he wasn't alone. I'm glad that, you know, I was the last person that he was able to connect with, because I would have, the thought of him being by himself would have just decimated me. And had we been in Alaska, I can't even imagine the mayhem that would have happened, you know, alone with the dog and us thousands of miles away. So things happen for a reason, and I'm not grateful that this happened, but I'm grateful that the events happened in the way that they did. So I'm heartbroken, for sure, and I'm devastated, and... he was a best friend to me for 20 plus years. So he's irreplaceable. And as I told Jerry, when I had a post on Facebook later that, you know, for all of us, there will be this giant Derek-sized hole in our lives for a while. And while I don't think that's ever going to get fixed, you know, it will get better. And I have lots of memories and stories, so that will be good. And the final thing I will say, besides the fact that I will say that Derek had a huge heart and would help anybody and was always pretty easygoing about almost everything. So those are all good memories.
Let me just echo what Drew said about how, I mean, thank you for talking about this now, especially since it's so fresh. And, yeah, I'm happy that he had you there. I'm also happy that Jesse was with you there, even though I understand it was very stressful on him as well. The fact that you don't have to go back to a home by yourself, makes me happier as your brother, just to know that, you know, I mean, you're a tough guy, but this is going to suck.
Oh yeah, no, it definitely sucks. Plus, you know, we have a house full of 20 years of crap. So it's not like, you know, it's not like I can just like be done with it. Like I've got file cabinets to go through and clothes to go through, and he's got furniture and all kinds of belongings and a garage full of stuff. And, you know, he's got a pickup that I can't drive. And so it's just like, oh, so there's going to be a lot of stuff. But he's got lots of friends, and his crew at work have already said that, you know, his boss already said that they'll help us anyway that we need. The tribe's going to take care of the funeral expenses and all of that. So that's not a concern. So that's a huge burden lifted.
Yeah, no kidding.
So, you know, it's going to be a lot of having to figure out what the hell do I do with a garage full of tools. So I got a lot.
Yeah.
I've got a lot of lists going on right now.
I'm sure.
So.
Yeah, because everything changes.
Oh, yeah. I've spent so much on the phone the last, you know. Yeah. Today was yesterday afternoon, and today I've made so many phone calls. So, and it doesn't get any easier. I keep thinking the more I do this, it should get easier. I'm like, nope, it doesn't. So,
well, again, kudos for being able to even tell us the story. Because, yeah, I'm sure I wouldn't want to tell it how many times you have. Again, being so fresh, too.
It's tough, but it's also important that people know. I mean, I think it's important that people know it wasn't, like, he wasn't seemingly in any pain, and it was quick. It was sudden.
So. Well, and let me just also commend you for the way you handled it on Facebook. Facebook is one of those tricky things where people keep track of each other and their kids and whatnot. So it's a very useful tool. But you managed to thread the needle really well with being very respectful, but also pretty matter of fact. Because, you know, you don't want to do a death notification to people over a social media if you can help it.
Well, and
there
and
comes a point where you don't have a choice.
Yeah, I made as many phone calls as I could to people that I knew, but I knew eventually by making the phone calls, somebody was going to post something. So it was kind of a race for me to notify as many people I thought as I could before. And then Travis actually was helping advise me because I was not. Yesterday I was
hats off to Dr. Wonders. I'm sure he is struggling with this as well.
Yeah. Yeah. He is. We all are. But he was very helpful. He came over yesterday because he was probably about as bad as we were.
Sure.
But he was able to advise me and guide me. I was able to do Facebook, and he's good with the online social media stuff that I don't know anything about. Like, I know very little about Twitter, for instance. But we managed to figure out Derek's phone, and so we can get into his Twitter account. And so we're going to make an announcement there, just so that all of those people know. Although they don't necessarily know him, but it's important that they know why he's gone.
Sure.
That he is gone. The Facebook thing was just, I think, I wanted to be as neutral as possible, with being as sensitive as possible, because I know I wouldn't want to have to find out by Facebook, except if there wasn't another way. So
no, I mean, you did a really great job with that. It was very succinct. It was very appropriate. And yeah, nobody wants to find out that way. But I mean, some people are only going to find out that way. So
to no one's surprise, it went through about 20 drafts.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah.
Edit after edit. But you know, and again, anybody who knows him is welcome to the ceremony. If anybody's interested, they can contact me, email or text or through the podcast. And I will have more details as details develop. Right now, I don't have anything right now. So it's, you know, we're not even 48 hours out. So, there's a lot ahead. There's a lot that's still got to happen. I did find a place, that will honor the tribal process. So that's positive.